Certainly glad that you're here today on this holiday weekend. We appreciate you coming and being with us, especially those that are visiting with us. Good to see Mark and Vicki as well as others that might be visiting with us today. We hope that you'll linger for a little bit after the services, that we can get better acquainted with you if we haven't been acquainted with you before. Today I want to talk with you for just a few moments on the subject of Psalm chapter 15. Psalm chapter 15 just has five verses to it. So it's not a very long psalm. I can remember when we were having training classes years ago. This goes back probably 40 years ago now. And I would sit in training classes and they would talk about the hermeneutic and things like that. And I just as a teenager just sort of confused about that. Old Brother Staggs, he was sitting there and he said, "Come here." He said, "Let me teach you how to preach." I said, "Okay." So he took me to passages like these that might pose a question in the beginning. And then after it poses a question, it will give the answer for you and then draw a conclusion as well. So this is a very, very simple sermon today for us to study. In verse 1, Psalm chapter 15, "Lord, who will abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your holy hill? He who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. He who does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against his friend, in whose eyes a vile person is despised. But he honors those who fear the Lord. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change. He who does not put out his money at usury, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things shall never be moved." So as we look at this morning, we want to notice first of all that all men are invited to be a guest of God. And he shows us the way to have fellowship with God, and he shows us the way to heaven. There are three sections to this. There is the question in verse 1. There is the answer in verses 2 through the beginning of verse 5. And then the conclusion is going to be drawn at the end of verse 5. So very, very simple lesson for you today. First of all, we ask the question, as is posed here in verse 1. And that is, if we look at it in its simplest form, who is going to be the guest of God? The question is found, ask of Jehovah, who has the real answer. The first part of the question is, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may abide in your tabernacle? We understand that the tabernacle was a tent, or a temporary structure. The word abide, compared in just a minute to the word dwell, is that of a sojourner. It has the idea of that which is temporary, a temporary dweller here. Such is a type, Borman talked about this morning, a type of the church. The question is, who is going to have fellowship with God? Who may abide in your tabernacle? Who shall commune with the Lord? The second question is here, who may dwell in your holy hill? The idea of a holy hill is that evidently of Zion. Sing a song a lot of times about we're marching to Zion, we're marching to Jerusalem. But we as Christians aren't marching to physical Jerusalem. We are marching to that which is heavenly. And the word here, dwell, compared to that of abide in the first part of the verse, is that of something that is permanent. And such is the type of heaven. The first part may be the question about, as far as we are concerned, about who may abide in your tabernacle. Well, who will be a part of the church. Or in the second part here, who may dwell in your holy hill. Who is going to go? Who is going to go to heaven? Who shall inhabit and inherit the heavenly Jerusalem? Who shall be, the term of the lesson here, a guest of God? Who shall be a guest of God? So, who is in the church and who is going to heaven? Well, he gives us the answer here to this. Like I said, very, very simple lesson for us today. In verses 2 through 5, first thing he says in verse 2 is the person who walks uprightly. The person who walks uprightly, that's the person who's going to abide in the tabernacle. That's the person that's going to dwell. We're going to dwell in the holy hill. Daily life that is in harmony, with God. In 1 Peter and in chapter 1 and in verse 15, 1 Peter chapter 1 and in verse 15, he says in verse 15, but like the Holy One who called you, be holy also in all your behavior, because it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. We talked about this last Sunday night, about just like a compass points northward, our compass as a Christian is always going to point Godward. Every decision that we make in this life is going to be pointed Godward as to, is this going to help me go to heaven? Is this going to help my family go to heaven? Is this going to help other folks go to heaven as well? That I'm going to be just, that I'm going to be fair with my fellow man, that there's not going to be any hypocrisy or guile in my mouth. It sets God in service to him first. In 1 Peter and in chapter 3 and in verse 15, 1 Peter chapter 3 and in verse 15, he says in 1 Peter 3 and in verse 15, says verse 15, but sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who ask you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence. He realizes that we are merely just sojourners here. We're just here for a little while. So as we're here for a little while, one of the first things we do is we walk uprightly. The second thing that he states here in verse 2 is that the person who wants to abide in the tabernacle, the person that wants to dwell in the holy hill, is one that's going to work righteousness. He obeys the commandments of the Lord. In Psalm chapter 119 and 172, Psalm 119, and in verse 172, it says, let my tongue sing of your word, for all your commandments are righteous. Over in Acts and in chapter 10 and in verses 34 and 35. Acts chapter 10 and in verses 34 and 35. It says in verse 34, and opening his mouth, Peter said, I most certainly understand now that God is not one to show partiality. For in every nation, the man who fears him and does what is right is welcome to him. In fact, he says over in John, 1 John, and in chapter 2 and in verse 29, 1 John chapter 2 and in verse 29, he says in verse 29, if you know that he is righteous, you will know that everyone also who practices righteousness is born of him. Third thing we see here very quickly, he speaks the truth in his heart. He's going to be honest. The person that's going to abide in his tabernacle, the person that's going to dwell in his holy hill, is going to speak the truth. He is going to be honest. He doesn't deceive anybody. He doesn't deceive anybody by word. He doesn't deceive anybody by action. He doesn't deceive anybody by silence. He understands the destiny of liars. They're going to be in the lake of fire. He keeps his heart pure, Proverbs chapter 4 and in verse 23. And he's honest. He's honest with himself. That's one of the things it talks about in the parable of the sower. That you have an honest and a good heart. So that's the first three things there we see so far. Concerning this man's walk. Concerning this man's work. Concerning this man's word. This is the person that's going to abide in the tabernacle. The person that's going to be in the church. This is the person that's going to dwell in his holy hill. This is the person that's going to go to heaven. The person that does these things, that has these characteristics. We see in verse 3 now, it says he does not backbite. He does not backbite with his tongue. It doesn't cause injury. He doesn't cause wounds with his tongue. In James and in chapter 1, chapter 3 has a lot to say about, the tongue. Certainly Proverbs has a lot to say about the tongue as well. James almost like the Proverbs with that of the idea of the tongue. But in verse 26 it says, if anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. Or in the older version, it says this man's religion is vain. Causes wounds with his tongue. Over in chapter 3 again. It says in verse 6, the tongue is a fire. The very world of iniquity, the tongue is set among our members as what defiles the entire body. It sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. If I have the proper attitude, and I do not backbite with my tongue, then I am not going to slander. I'm not going to slander other people in Proverbs and in chapter 11. Proverbs chapter 11. And in verse 9, Proverbs 11 verse 9, it says, and with his mouth, the godless man destroys his neighbor. But through knowledge, the righteous will be delivered. Or in verse 13, the same chapter, it says, he who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy conceals the manner. Or in chapter 12 and in verse 18, it says, there is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. The one who backbite is a coward, lacking the courage to say it to someone's face. Verse 3 as well says, nor does evil to his neighbor. Over in Matthew and in chapter 7. What we term many times the golden rule. Matthew 7 and in verse 12. In everything therefore treat people in the same way you want them to treat you. For this is the law and the prophets. Also over in the book of Romans, beginning in chapter 12, talks about different attitudes toward different people. And in Romans chapter 12 and in verse 17 beginning, it talks about the attitude that we should have towards our enemy. It says in verse 17, Romans chapter 12 through verse 21. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men, if possible. As far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in doing so, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Maybe someone's done you wrong. Maybe somebody's done Phil wrong over here. Well, Phil has a choice. Phil has a choice that he can seek to do them wrong. Turn around, sort of an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. You know, the punishment ought to fit the crime. You had a crime toward me. I'm gonna do something towards you now. Or the other attitude that he can have is not do them wrong. And this is what he talks about here in this part of the context. That if you want to abide in the tabernacle, if you want to dwell in the holy hill, if you want to be a part of the church, if you want to go to heaven when you die, do not practice evil. Do not do evil to your neighbor. Well, there's something else here as well, verse 3, very quickly. Nor does he take up reproach against his friend. And maybe from the context there, maybe as I look at it, maybe he's not his friend now. Maybe they've been friends in the past, but something has happened along the way. But the person does not slander or gossip concerning the friend. In fact, where he says, nor does he take up. The attitude of take up as if an instrument of destruction before him. And the latter part of this, the idea of reproach, to strip or to make bare, to strip another of his character or his reputation. Maybe someone's been a friend of Mark down here in the past. And all of a sudden that man has treated Mark in such a way to where it's unbecoming as a child of God. And all of a sudden Mark knows some things about him too. Now I have a choice now, or Mark has a choice now. I can ruin this man's name. I can destroy this man's integrity by what I can say. No. He says, the person that's going to abide in the tabernacle, the person that's going to dwell in the holy hill, does not take up a reproach against his friend. You don't use these things against someone else. You don't slander somebody else. You don't use this as an instrument of destruction. Verse 4. It says, and whose eyes a vile person is despised, but he honors those, who fear the Lord. What about this person? Well, this person he hates. He hates wickedness. In Romans chapter 1 and in verse 32. Romans chapter 1 verse 32. And although they know the ordinance of God, and those who practice such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, but they give hearty approval to those who practice them. That person's not going to be like that. He hates wickedness. He despises wickedness. Over in Ephesians chapter 5 and in verse 11. Ephesians chapter 5 and in verse 11. It says in verse 11, do not participate in unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead even expose them. Or in 2 Corinthians chapter 6. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verses 14 through 17. Do not be bound together with unbelievers, for what partnership has righteousness and lawlessness, or what fellowship has light with darkness? Or what harmony has Christ with, the word's really Belial there, a lot of people call it Belial, but Belial. And what has a believer in common with an unbeliever? Or what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are the temple of the living God, just as God said, I will dwell in them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Therefore, come out from their midst and be separate, and do not touch what is unclean, and I will welcome you. The person loves those, though, who does what's right. Despises wickedness, but he loves those who are doing right. He doesn't respect the person. It doesn't make any difference who the person is, whether it's their race or their wealth or education or anything else. The person that does right, he honors those who fear the Lord. Very quickly, he swears to his own heart and does not change. Swears to his own heart and does not change. What does that mean? He's a man of his word. He's a man of his word. He can be counted on. Talk about reliable here. In James chapter 5 and in verse 12, it says, and above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but your yes is to be yes and your no, no, so that you may not fall under judgment. He's a man that keeps his promise, even when it's to his own detriment. I made a promise. Maybe the promise is going to be very costly for me to keep, and a lot of people back out of it then. Maybe it's going to be difficult for me to keep. Maybe there's going to be some embarrassment for me to keep this promise. But still, that man is going to keep that promise. That is a man that's going to abide in the Lord's tabernacle. That is a man that's going to dwell in his holy hill. Well, one other. There's the end of it. He talked about, he walks uprightly. It's a man that's going to abide in the tabernacle, dwell in the holy hill. He's going to work righteousness. He's going to speak the truth in his heart. He does not backbite with his tongue nor does he evil to his neighbor, nor does he take a reproach against his friend, in whose eyes of all persons is despised, but he honors those who fear the Lord. He swears to his own hurt and does not change. And then the last thing here, in his answer of the two questions, he does not put his hand to usury, nor take a bribe. Usury is unreasonable interest. We found over Deuteronomy there to where they could charge interest, but unreasonable interest is like what occurred over in Nehemiah chapter 5. When they were taking advantage of other people. That I am going to be a person of principle. And that my soul is not for sale when it comes to money. Well, the conclusion now to this little lesson. That is, he said at the end of verse 5, he who does these things, shall never be moved. Shall never be moved. Get ready to put a fence in. And when we put a fence in, they're going to take the time to where they're going to make that fence well grounded. It's not going to move. And the idea here is well grounded, that it's firmly fixed, as is Zion itself, that it is anchored in Hebrews chapter 6 and in verse 19, Hebrews 6 and in verse 19, he says in verse 19, this is the hope we have as an anchor of the soul, a hope that is sure and steadfast and one which enters within the veil. Over in 1 John chapter 2 and in verse 17, after he says, do not love the world or the things of the world. Any man love the world, love the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, boastful pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. Then he says in verse 17, the world is passing away and also its lust, but the one who does the will of God lives forever. He's anchored. He's not going to be moved. Or the last verse here, and then our lesson's over for today. It's 2 Peter in chapter 1. It says, now this is the reason also, applying all diligence to your faith, apply moral excellence to your moral excellence knowledge, and you know the score there. But the thing I want you to notice is verse 10. It says, therefore, brethren, be all the more diligent to make certain about his calling and choosing you. For as long as you practice these things, you will never stumble. You're going to be grounded. You're not going to flip back and forth. You're not going to quit coming to church for a while and then come back later and then stop and start again back and forth. You're going to be grounded concerning what God wants you to do. So that's the lesson. The two questions. Who's going to abide in the tabernacle? Who's going to dwell in the holy hill? You get the answer in verses 2 through 5. And then you get the conclusion. And that is, you're going to be grounded in the Word of God. We would encourage you that if you need to respond today to the gospel in any way, to be baptized into Christ or to come back to your first love, I invite you to come now while together we stand while we sing.